Okay, we begin here by the two dots on the bottom of Yudchet Amud Bet. Gemara is discussing the opinions that were brought in the Mishnah. We had the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and as we noted in the Mishnah, there didn't seem to be a distinction between the two of them. Rabbi Eliezer says in the Mishnah, Sheretz v'ne'ala mimenu, avelem sheretz chayav, v'enu chayav elem migdash. If he knows about elem tum'ah, which is tumata sheretz, then that is considered to be chayav and kurban olevi oreid. But if he forgets about the Migdash and Kodesh, that does not obligate one in a kurban olevi oreid. And then you have Rabbi Akiva say the same thing almost right afterwards, which is Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ne'alam imenu v'hu tamei, alem tuma chayav, enu chayav elem migdash. That is chayav for elem tuma, not elem migdash. So it seems like Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are saying the exact same thing. And the question is, that the Gemara asks, if my beinayu, what's the difference between them? Is there any nafkamina between their opinions? So we're going to have two views in the Gemara and the Amoraim. The first set of Amoraim are going to say there is a difference between them, and they're going to explain what that is. And there will be a second set of Amoraim that say there is no difference between them, which is Mashmaot Dorshim. It's the Gemara says in a number of places, it's just the way they get to their drusha. Their drusha is different, but their conclusion is the same. So the first set of Amoraim, Amar Chizkia, Sheretz V'Nevela Igabenayu. The difference between them is identifying the particular tumah that is causing the problem over here. The sheretz v'nevela are examples of tumah. Rabbi Eliezer savar b'inan adiyada ibisheretz itmei ibinevela itmei. He says you need to know what type of tumah that you incurred or you came into contact with. It's not enough that you know that you are tamei. You need to know what type of tumah that you came into. Because it says, onefesh asher tiga b'chol davar tamei. That would be a generic statement. Then, O benivlat chayat me'ah, O benivlat behemat me'ah, O benivlat sheretz tamei. Then it specifies all the different forms of tumah. And Rabbi Eliezer sees it as indicating that you need to know which tumah it is that you came into contact with it, and then v'ne'alam, and then you forgot about it. So that's Rabbi Eliezer's view. Rabbi Akiva savar lo b'inan adiyada. Rabbi Akiva says you don't need that type of detailed knowledge. As long as you know you became Tamei, it's irrelevant how you became Tamei, whether it was a Sheretz and Nevela, they're both Tumat Yom. They're both something that only makes you Tamei for a day. And as long as you know you are Tamei, that is sufficient knowledge to make you Chayav in a Kurban Ule V'yureid. V'chein Amar Ula, Sheretz v'Nevela Igamenayu. Ula seconds this view of Chizkia, that the machloket here between them is about what type of detailed knowledge you need about the tumah. Dula Rami, the Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Eliezer. Now, as opposed to Chizkiah's statement, which is explicit, Ula's statement is inferred from a question that he asked. He brought a stira between two positions of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, and another statement of Rabbi Eliezer, Mashani. Miyamar Rabbi Eliezer bin an adiyada, ibi sheretz itmei, ibi nevela itmei. Is it really true that our Mishnah demands that through what Rabbi Eliezer says, that you need to know the details of the tumah? For amini, am Rabbi Eliezer manafshach. What's the difference? Chelev achal, chayav. Notar achal, chayav. This is a Mishnah in Kretot. The Mishnah there says that a person who does something that would make him chayav in a chatat, does he have to know why he's bringing the chatat, or for what aveira he's bringing a chatat? So over here, what Rabbi Eliezer says is, what does it make a difference if he ate chelev, or if he ate notar? In either case, he's chayav a chatat. So it should be irrelevant whether he ate this or that, or he remembers which one he ate, as long as he knows that he's chayav a chatat. Shabbat chilel chayav, Yom Kippur chilel chayav. Again, if he did malacha, he's not sure if he did it on Yom Kippur, he did it on Shabbat. Either one of those, vishogeg, will result in a need for a chatat. So why should it matter if it was Shabbat or if it was Yom Kippur? Ishto nida baal chayav, achoto baal chayav. If in a situation in which he made a mistake and he ended up sleeping with his wife, who's a nida, or with his sister, both of those are chayav chataot. And again, it should be irrelevant which of the violations is causing him to be chayav in this case. So if that's true by the chatat, seems like Rabbi Eliezer doesn't need that type of detailed knowledge. So how come over there he doesn't require that type of detailed knowledge to know or be aware of which avera you are violating? And over here, all of a sudden he needs you to know which tumah caused you the problem. So Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua. So there in the Mishnah in Kretot, Rabbi Yeshua responds to him and says, Arei Omer, Oda Yelav Chatato Asher Chata Ba, Ad Shivada Lecha B'ma Chata. So here the pasuk tells you, with regards to a chatat, oho da'ilav, it was made known to you, chatato asher chata. bah, the sin that you did needs to be made known to you, and then vevi, then you bring a korban chatat. So the prerequisite for a korban chatat is knowing the violation that you're bringing the chatat for. So Rabbi Yeshua disagrees with Rabbi Elazar and says you need to know which violation it is. It's not enough that you know you violated something. You need to know the particular violation in order to bring a chatat. Omishani says there's a difference. Hatam asher chata vehevi, my rachmana. Chet koshu. By the case of chatat, it says asher chata, that you sinned. It doesn't say the particular sin, it just says you sinned. It says, Zehudeh lav chatato asher chata. He sinned. He knew that he did sin. It's not saying which particular sin that he violated, it's giving you a generic statement about the fact that you did sin. As long as you know you did sin, that's enough to obligate you to bring a korban. That's what it says. Mishani chatam asher chata vehevi. It skips the word ba, because the Gemara is going to come back and ask what they do with the word ba. But it's here, asher chata ba vehevi. Hevi is the next word afterwards in the pasuk, that you bring the chatat. Amar rachmana, chet koshu. As long as you know that you've sinned, that's enough to obligate you in a chatat. Hocha mechdektiv. Over here, it's different. By the case of the korban olev yored, it says, b'chol davar tamei. Obenivlat sheretz tamei. Again, they do a dot, dot, dot. They skip the middle of the pasuk. But what the Gemara is saying is that it gives you a generic statement about tumah, and then it goes into the details of what tumah is, and it gives you different examples of tumah. The fact that it went into the details only serves to indicate that you must know those details. Otherwise, you could have just said the generic statement of Degah b'chol davar tamei would have been sufficient. The fact that it went and specified afterwards makes a demand on you. Lomali. That specification makes a higher demand on you that be the knowledge that you have in order to be chayav in the korban ole v'yored. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's not a demand in a normal chatat for particular knowledge about why you sinned. So if you ate no tar or chaylev, you're chayav a chatat, and if you don't know which one, it's fine, because you know you sinned, you know you did something wrong, bring a chatat. That's not a requirement by a regular chatat. By korban ole v'yored, the extraneous language in the pasuk makes a demand of you that you knew beforehand how you became tamei in order to be mechayev you in the back end. Rabbi Akiva, I did the baile mikhtav behema v'chaya. For Rabbi Akiva, because you have to write behema v'chaya, then nivlat sheretz no longer becomes extraneous in nature, look at the Rabbi. Because Rabbi's drasha that we had earlier in the Masechta that says, why do you need behema? Why do you need chayav? Because each one is subsumed in the other. And then he used it there for gzeira shava, behema, behema, to get you the azhara. Rabbi's statement before, akrani chayav behema, lama nemran, nemar kan behema tameya, v'nemar lahalan behema tameya, malahalan kodesh, avkan tumat kodesh. That's what Rabbi uses the behema for. In Vayikra Zion, it says, nefesh ki tega b'chol tamei, b'tumat adam, o behema tameya, So that teaches you about Kodesh. That you're not allowed to eat Kodesh when you are Tamei. And that tells us that the Korban of Yored is related to that eating of Kodesh when you have Tumat Haguf. That's Rabbi's source for that. If you remember back on Zion, we were trying to discover where the Azharot for Mikdash and Kodesh came from, or how do we know that our Parshiyah of Korban of Yored is speaking about those issues. So his was from that Gezer Shava, Behema, Behema. And that's because Behema was extraneous because of Chaya, that's already mentioned. Chaya subsumes within it Behema. So that Gezer Shava demanded that the Pasuk write, O Nefesh Hashay Tiga B'chol Davar Tamei, O B'nivlat Chaya Tameya, O B'nivlat Behema Tameya. So that was already necessary to be put in the Pasuk because of the Behema and the Chaya. Then when it adds on afterwards, O B'nivlat Sheretz Tamei, it's just part of the list. It's just a literary style to just add it in. Once you already have the other two, you may as well add in the third one, and there's no significance to it. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar says there is significance. Behema and Chaya were necessary for the drusha of Rabbi, and similarly, the Sheretz is there to teach us this din. Tosfot over here discusses Behema and Chaya, what exactly is necessary and not necessary for the drusha of Rabbi that we had earlier in the Masechta. Basically, the idea is that those words are necessary because of the limudim that derive from them, and not nivlat sheretz. And the question is, then how do you view nivlat sheretz in that context? Is nivlat sheretz then just literary style? Or is nivlat sheretz also significant like behema and chaya? So that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Akiva's position. Kedetana deberi Rabbi Shmuel, kol parasha shenemra v'nishneit, lo nishneit elo bishvil davar shenitchadesh ba. Similar to the drasha of the Bei Rabbi Shmuel, who say that whenever a parsha is repeated, it's repeated for the chidush that is in that parsha. So now, over here, Rabbi Akiva is making the claim that the repetition or the necessity to repeat over there is because of the thing that was taught, which was the behema and the chaya, which is what we learned from. And so for Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, it's sufficient that there is a chidush in the repetition. The whole repetition can be necessary just for the one particular item that you're getting out of it. And that's what's happening over here. You need the repetition for Rabbi's din, and that's sufficient reason to repeat even additional items, and therefore you can't deem the mention of sheretz as being extraneous because it could be justified for the davar shnitchadesh ba. Rabbi Eliezer, hi ba, mavidei. What does he do with the word ba, which I mentioned before? By the case of the chatat, it says, odai lav chatato asher chata ba. What does he do with that ba? Prat limit asek. That comes to exclude a case of mitasek. Mitasek is not chayav. We'll discuss that in 1 second. So now, prat mitasek, Rashi here gives 2 examples, both of which bother Tosafot. And we'll discuss this because it has important ramifications within the world of mitasek. Which is, Rashi says, nitkaven lachtoch et talush v'chatach et mechubar. He intended to cut something that was detached, and he ends up cutting something that was attached. Nitkaven l'ishto v'arei achuto imo b'mita. He intended to sleep with his wife. His sister happened to be in the bed with him. V'nishmita ishto uba achuto tachta. And his wife slipped down, and instead he ended up with his sister. So that is considered to be mitaseik, which is the person's engaged in an activity that is mutar, and it ends up that they end up with something that is asur. They engaged in the activity in a manner that should have been fine. Something changed in that interim and caused them to end up with an isur. Be'ezu chayav, what's the case when you are chayav? What's not called mitaseik, Rashi says? It's kavin lachtoch kasavor talush v'nimsa mechubar. He goes to cut a cucumber. He thinks the cucumber is already detached from the vine. Meantime, it really was attached to the vine. That's not prat mitaseik. That's someone who made a mistake in assessing the situation and the judgment. He intended to cut something that was separated, but the object itself that he intended to cut ends up being the object he cuts, but it turns out it's mechubar. So that's a case of nitkaven lezeh v'nimsa acher. He figures out afterwards that there's something else here going on. Supposed to the previous case where nitkaven lachtoch et talush, he intended to cut the severed cucumber. There was a severed cucumber there, and he ended up cutting the mechubar cucumber instead. So that's mitasek. O kesavar ayom chol, or kesavar malacha zu muteret, or he thinks today is a weekday, or he thinks this malacha is okay. O mikol makom lezu nitkaven. For that he intended. V'chein balochoto v'nitkaven l'gufze kesavar hu ishto. He ishto. By the case of his sister, he thought the woman that he was sleeping with was his wife, and it turns out to be his sister. As opposed to the case where his wife was there, and that's who he intended for, and then it got switched with his sister. Over here, the woman that he intended for is the woman he slept with. It just turns out to be someone else. It's not his wife. It turns out to be his sister. The difference between Shnei Gufim and Gufachat. That's the key difference between what Rashi's laying out over here. Rashi says anytime it's the same object that the mistake is made about, there you will be chayav. Because the intended object is the object that turned out to be what you did. You mistakenly identify the object, which is you thought it was your wife. It turns out it was your sister. You thought it was a detached cucumber. It turns out it was an attached cucumber. You thought it was a weekday. It turns out it was Shabbat. But your intention was for the particular object in those cases. In all the cases of mitaseik, was that you had an intention for a particular object, and then you end up with another object. Something got switched with the object. You went to cut a severed cucumber, you could then cut a attached cucumber, but there is a severed cucumber there. That'll be a case of mitasek versus the other cases where it's unintentional, but you still will be chayav for it. So here Tosafot takes up 2 issues with Rashi. The first of which is, we have a principle, then, ein mitasek b'chelev v'arayot, shekein neheneh. That there is an exception to the rule of mitasek. Mitasek works in terms of giving you a dispensation and making you patur, as long as it's not something that you get hanah from, something that you get benefit from. And that the Gemara lays out in Kreitot, 2 exceptions are chelev and arayot. In chelev, when you eat it, you get benefit from the consumption of the item. So irrespective of the mitasek aspect of it, the hanah in some way, and you have to again, formulate that or articulate that, then connects you with the Aveira that you've done, and you can no longer say, I'm mitaseik. The case where I went to cut the severed cucumber and I cut the mechubar, I don't get any benefit from the cut of the mechubar cucumber over what I would have gotten from the severed cucumber. In the case where I went to eat the shuman and I ate the chalev instead, there you do benefit from the fact that you ate the chalev in the end. It is something that you got hana from. That hana, in some way, either creates the kavana, extends the kavana to that object, or we just say that hana is something where you benefited from an aveira, and you got to take care of that, you've got to get kapara for that. So hana is the exception to the rule, and those two exceptions are chalev and arayot. Both of those are where you get physical hana'a, which is an important aspect of it as well, which is that you're getting real, tangible hana'a from these objects, and mitasek doesn't count. Rashi brought examples of arayot and chelev. Those are the cases where mitasek doesn't have application. So that's the first thing that Tosfot says. He says there, agav riata. He was running through things and he mentioned them, but those aren't examples. And the second thing Tosfot says is, what about the fact that by Shabbat, you are patur because of melechet makshevet. The Gemara says the reason that you're patur by Shabbat is not because of mitasek, but because you didn't accomplish what you intended. In Shabbat, melechet makshevet is a prerequisite for being chayav. You need to accomplish your intended goal, and you need to do it in the method that you wanted to. That's called melechet makshevet. Melechet makshevet asrat Torah, not anything else. And that eliminates all these items, because in all these cases, that was not your intent. If it wasn't your intent, then that's not melechet makshevet. So why are we speaking about mitasek when you have melechet makshevet? So again, Tosafot, first of all, eliminates the chelev arayot and says that that is not relevant to our cases here because mitasek doesn't have application by them. And again, he says Rashi just put it in here because he was rushing through examples, but he didn't really mean to tell you chelev and arayot because those aren't good examples. The second thing he says is venira tika trei gavne mitasek. There are two types of mitasek. This is what Tosfot says. One example is, nitkaven lachtoch mechubar zeh, v'chatach mechubar acher. You intended to cut this object that was attached to the vine, and you ended up cutting or detaching something else. So you intended for this cucumber that was attached to the vine, and then you cut a different cucumber. Over there, miftar mitam, shelo naseid machshavato. The reason you're patur over there is because your intention was not carried out. That is the lack of melechet makshevet. That's not prat mitasek. You were mitasek in a mechubar cucumber, and you ended up with a mechubar cucumber that's not called mitasek. Mitasek is you're intending for something that's mutar, and you end up with something that is asur. Here, you intended for isur, and you got isur. Just different isur than you had intended for. That is exempted because of melechet makshevet asra Torah. So he says that's the first type of mitasek. There's a second form of mitasek, kigom. And now he gives an example, it happens to be a machloket about what is called mitasek, whether it's nikavin achtok et talush, ulagbi et talush. He either intended to cut something that was detached, or lift something that was detached, the market itle, a market itle. He's saying you each one according to their opinion, which is the machloket about how mitasek works. Benimsa mechubar. Turns out it was attached. Nasek machshavato. Umiftar mishum ba prat the mitasek. And then he figures out that it was mechubar, that his intent was carried out, or it's a case where he intended to lift something that was detached and ended up cutting the mechubar item. So there's a failure in the object being different than what you expected. It's mechubar instead of talush. Both of those, according to Bali Tosfot, are considered to be mitasek. So he won't get the ptur melachet machshevet, because in the end, what he intended for happened. The problem is that he went to cut something that was detached, and he figures out it wasn't detached, but rather mechubar. Or the other possibility is like bi'at talush. He went to pick up something that was talush, and then he ended up nimsa mechubar, and then he figures out when he cuts it that it was mechubar. The question there is, what type of change do you need? Do you need it both to be a difference in the mechanism by which you were going about to do this, which means you intended to cut and you still cut, but it turns out it was mechubar instead of talush? Or is it that you intended lagbi at the talush? You went to lift up the talush, and then you cut the mechubar. And you ended up cutting the mechubar instead, meaning that you were trying to do something that was heter, and you ended up doing something of isur, but it was completely detached from the heter that you were engaged in. So, whatever one it is, that is the case of mitasek. And that is what Tosafot then claims is the cases by which you are patur and Shabbat. Each one for its own reason. One, because you failed in Melachat Machshevet, which is that you didn't get the intended object that you wanted. The object changed, and therefore it's not Melachat Machshevet. The other one is Mit'asek, which is you intended for a certain action, and turns out it was different. You intended for something that was Mutar, but it turns out the object that you were intending for was something that was Asur, and therefore you perpetrated an Isur. In both those cases, you are Patur. Now, Tosfa points out, V'chelev, Nam Ikatre Gavne Mit'asek. Those same two situations apply by Chelev, and in both of those you're going to be Chayav. Kagon, Niktkaven Lechol Chelev Zeh, V'chal Chelev Acher. You intended to eat one piece of chelev, and you turn out you eat another piece of chelev. It means you intended for Isur, you just got a different Isur. By Shabbat, you're patur because lack in Melechet Machshevet. By chelev, it doesn't matter. Our chayav below time of the nene. You don't even need nene. The shloshayach the miftere mitam Melechet Machshevet. You don't have the patur of Melechet Machshevet by chelev, and so therefore, even if you intended for one piece of chelev and ate a different piece of chelev, you ate chelev in the end, you're chayav. Shabbat says you need to get the right intent. There you don't need it by chelev. You just need to eat chelev to be chayav. There's a second. Oh, mitasek acher kagon savur shehu shuman. He thought it was shuman. Orok ubalo. Or that it was spit. And then he swallows it. And it turns out that it was chelev. Now there, by Shabbat, you are patur because of mitasek. Over here, by chelev, you're going to be chayav. Shekein nene. Because of the nene aspect of it. B'taime du nene. Umishum alach mashevet lo kaya kulu. Each one of them will be depending on what the case is. So now you have, by chelev, the same structure you have by Shabbat, and in both of those cases you're going to be chayav. By the case of Melachat Machshevet, Shabbat has a particular dispensation that allows you to be patur in those cases where your intent is not carried out. Chelev doesn't have that, so you're going to be chayav if you simulate that effect. That is, for instance, you're trying to eat one object and you eat a different object, both are asurim. By Shabbat, patur. Because it's not Melechem Hashevet. You intended for A, you did B, that's not carrying out your Machshava. By Chelev, if you ate A, Chelev, or you ate B, Chelev, you're in the Isur, and there's no Melechem Machshevet Ptur, so you're Chayav in that case. The second case is a case of Mitasek. A case where Tosafot claims that you intended to cut the Talush, turns out it was Mechubar. By Shabbat, you have a Ptur of Mitasek. By Chelev, the same thing, where you thought it was Shuman, and then it turns out it was Chelev, you're going to be Chayav, Shekein, Neh-Neh. That's where Chelev is Chayav. That means that in other cases where it's not Neh-Neh, Mitasek will apply. Just like it applies by Shabbat, it'll apply in those other cases. And then he criticizes Rashi's view of what's Chayav over here. Masha Perish Bekuntris, Ka Mitasek. What's the case of Mitasek according to Rashi? Rashi says, Hainu Mitkaven Lechtoch HaTalush, V'Chatach Et Mechubar. Vezu chayav nitkamin atoch etzeh v'chatach etzeh, kastav v'shu talush v'nimtza v'mechubar. Ein nir lefarish, el nirik appreciate. Says that's not right. He says that's wrong, but it's the way that I explained it. Rashi over here makes a distinction between, in the first case, what he calls mitasek is that you intended to cut the talush, and then you cut another object that was mechubar. That's how Rashi says was the case of mitasek. The case of shogeg. And not mitasek is where you intended to cut this object that was talush, and instead, it turns out it was mechubar. Rashi says you're chayav. Tosfot says that's a case of mitasek. Mitasek is when you intended to cut something that was talush, and you ended up cutting mechubar. For Tosfot, that is called mitasek. And this is a machluk at Rashi and Tosfot throughout Shas, about what is deemed to be mitasek, and what is deemed to be mitkaven. Rashi says that you need to change objects in order for it to be mitasek. You need to have separate objects. You need to be intending to cut a talush object and end up cutting a mechuba object that is different. That is called mitasek, according to Rashi. Mitasek is that you're involved in that action. The action is cutting. But the object changes, and that's what makes the Isur come about, because you hit a mechuba object instead of a talush object. That's called mitasek. You're engaged in cutting, but then you end up switching over to cutting mechubar instead of talush. Tosfa says, that's also mitasek, but there is even a mitasek, which Rashi over here says you're chayav for, is a case where he intended to cut the object, which was talush, and turns out it was mechubar. For Rashi, you are chayav in that case. For Tosfa, that's called mitasek. You are mitasek in something you think is heter, and it turns out to be isur. And that's the fundamental machloka between them with regards to mitasek. What is mitasek? According to Tosfot, it simply means that you are engaged in an activity you think is mutar. And it turns out that it is asur. That's called mitasek. For Rashi, mitasek means you're engaged in an activity that is completely mutar, and then you end up doing something that is asur. And so that's called mitasek, because you need to be engaged in heter before you can claim that there's a p'tura of mitasek. Tosfot says, no, you simply have to think you're engaged in heter, and it turns out it's isur, that's called mitasek, and Tosfot makes that point here that he disagrees with Rashi's view as to what is deemed to be mitasek. And obviously it has ramifications, because Tosfot has a much more lenient view as to what mitasek is. He thinks that anything that you thought you were doing was okay is enough to grant you the heter of mitasek, with the exceptions of shekei nena, in cases of achila and arayot, where it won't matter because mitasek is also chayav in those cases. All right, so that's a little digression to deal with issues of mitasek, which are important here, to see Tosafot explaining two types of mitasek. Again, that Shabbat has the additional dispensation of Lechet Makshevet on top of mitasek, and the machlok between Rashi and Tosafot is exactly what mitasek is. Now we have the other set of Amoraim here. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Mashmaut Dorshim Ikamenayu. So these are the set of Amoraim. You say, Rabbi Elazar and Kiva, there's nothing different between them. It's just the source, or the way that they learn out that there is such a distinction. V'chein Amar Rav Sheshin, Mashmaut Dorshim Ikamenayu. The way they are Doresh, this is the difference between them. But there's no halachic or normative difference between them. They both agree that you need to have Hilem Tumah and not Hilem Mikdash. The Rav Sheshir Machlip, the Rabbi Lezer, the Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Kiva, the Rabbi Lezer. Rav Sheshir wasn't careful when he tore out the Mishnah as to which opinion was Rabbi Lezer and which was Rabbi Akiva, because it made no difference. There was no halachic nafkamina. They both said the same thing. They just were doreshed in a different manner. And similar to Ula's position before, over here, again, doesn't seem like Rav Sheshir said it explicitly, but from his behavior or the way that he presented it, it seems like that's what he believed, that there was only Mashmaut Dorshim Igabeinayu, the fact that he interchanged their opinions and was not really careful about attributing Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar's position to one or the other. Okay, by Minei Rova Mir Rav Nachum, Helem Zeh B'Zeh B'Yado Mahu. So our mission actually dealt with this issue of Helem Zeh B'Zeh, that we said, again, shouldn't make a difference, according to those that believe that Helem Mikdash and Helem Tumah are both Yuchayav and a Korban Olevi Yoreid. If you forgot one, or you forgot both, it's the same thing, and you're going to be chayav, a korban oleh beorei. Where it makes a difference is Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Where you say that there is helem tumah, but there is no helem mikdash, now what happens when you forget both of them? Had you forgotten about the mikdash, then you would have been patur. Had you forgotten about the tumah, you would be chayav in the korban oleh beorei. Now you forgot about both, which one dictates the situation over here? Does it mean you're chayav because you had helem tumah? Or does it mean you're patur because you had Helem Mikdash? So the question that Rova is posing is in the position of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Amalei, Hare Helem Tumah Biyado, V'chayav. He says, it's pretty straightforward. He has Helem Tumah, that makes you Chayav. Adarabo, why don't you say the opposite? Hare Helem Mikdash Biyado, patur. I mean, he has the other halama which would make him patur. So why should he be Chayav? Samaravashi, Chazinan, Imi Tumah Kaparish, Hare Helem Tumah Biyado. If the reason that he desists from this behavior is because he's aware of the Tumah, then that means that Tumah was the forgetting that he had. V'chayav, and therefore he'll have to bring a Korban Oleh V'Yoreid. Imi Mikdash Kaparish, if it is the remembering that he's in the Mikdash that causes him to desist from this behavior, Ariel Mikdash Biyado Upatur, then the forgetting of the Mikdash is in hand and he is Patur. The way that he's describing this is that when he's reminded of the fact that he's in the Mikdash or that he is Tameh, which of those two things precipitates a change in his behavior? What makes him then aware that he's done something wrong? That awareness will tell us then what he forgot, because the awareness makes him do something different. That means forgetting that item is what caused him in the first place to engage in this activity. So if you remind him that he's Tamei, and he goes, oh my gosh, I'm Tamei, I gotta get out of here, then you know that forgetting the Tumah is what caused him to act in this manner. If you say to him, you're in the Mikdash, and he goes, oh my gosh, I'm in the Mikdash, I didn't realize it, and then he gets out, that shows you that he forgot that he was in the Mikdash. But the question that will derive from this, and which is obvious, the Gemara is going to ask it now, is the two seem to be correlated. They're integrally correlated. How could it be that if he remembers that he's in the Mikdash, unless he also remembers that he's Tamei, why is he running out of the Mikdash? I mean, one precipitates the other. If he remembers he's Tamei, there's no reason for him to leave unless he knows that he's in the Mikdash. The knowledge of both items is necessary for him to want to leave the place. If he remembers he's Tamei, he remembers that he's Tamei in the Mikdash. So by definition, he's remembering both items. And you can't really separate between them. And therefore, you don't get the result that you want. And that's what Amalei Rabbeinu the Ravashi, Klum Parish Mikdash El Mishum Tumah. The only reason you leave the Mikdash is because you are Tamei. If you told me he was in the Mikdash, And then he wasn't Tamei, he's not going to leave the Mikdash. The only reason he's leaving the Mikdash is because he's also Tamei. Klom perish me tumai l'mishum Mikdash. And the same thing. If you make him aware of he's Tamei, the only reason he's leaving is because he's in the Mikdash. If he was Tamei somewhere else, he wouldn't move at all. So the clear the two are correlated. Tosafot, therefore, in order to give more tokef to the position of Ravashi, gives two explanations as to what exactly he meant. Not like we were saying, when, if you remind him of this information, that's what causes him to leave, but rather you can discern from the individual which of the two items was weighing more heavily on his decision. You figure out which item was forgotten more by him, and which of those items, when he's reminded about it, has a deeper impact on the individual. And that's what Ravashi is saying. Or the Baalei Tosafot suggests that maybe the second thing you remind him of, by definition, becomes the item that causes him to leave. Because one piece of information without the other is not sufficient. And what Ravashi is basically saying is, whatever you remind him of second, which precipitates his change in plan, is what causes him to leave, and therefore that would be the defining shichicha in this case. So Tosafot gives two explanations for Ravashi's position in order to make it more palatable in terms of the question that Ravina presents on Ravashi's position. Eloloshna makes no difference. As Rashi says here, the conclusion of the Gemara is patur. Meaning the fact that you forgot Mikdash makes you patur over here, because Helem Mikdash is not a reason to bring a Korban Olevi Orei. Even though you have Helem Tumah that would make you Chayav, Helem Mikdash already leaves you out of the parsha of Korban Olevi Orei, and you would not be Chayav a Korban Olevi Orei when that information comes back to you. It has to be solely Helem Tumah in order to be Chayav. Otherwise, you are patur. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam over here, we mentioned this on the Mishnah, because if the Rabbeinu Tam says that when Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva say that you're patur from Helem Mikdash, that means that you're patur from a Korban Olevi Orei, but you're still Chayav for a Korban Chatat Kavua, because there's a Chiyuv Karet over here. And that's a huge Chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam, that lo miftar elemi Korban Olevi Orei, of a Chatat Kavua Chayav. Then you wouldn't do a bishogeg, you're chayav a chatat kavua, unless the Torah tells you otherwise. Well, the Torah tells you otherwise when you have helem tumah. When you have helem mikdash, it doesn't tell you otherwise. And therefore, you're not going to be patur the gamrei, but just rather patur mi a korban olevi orei, but chayav a chatat. The Baalei Tosafot disagree with this view of the Rabbeinu Tam, as well as many of the other Rishonim, dismiss this view of the Rabbeinu Tam and say when it says here patur, it means patur the gamrei. Tanu banan, shnei shvilim. You have two paths. Echad tamei ve'echad tor. One of them has tumah in it. If you go down that path, you're definitely tamei. You cross over a kever. One of them is tor. If you go that way, there's no kever there, you'd be tor. Tosafot points out over here that the shvilim have to be mishut rabim, because we have a principle from the Gemara in Sotah that safek tumah b'shut yachid is chayav. Safek tumah b'shut rabim is patur. So the safek here has to be b'shut rabim, because otherwise, if it's a b'shut yachid, we would treat it as a badai, as if he knows for certain that he became tamei. And for that reason, the case here must be a case in b'shut rabim. V'alach b'rishon v'lo nichnas. He went on the first path and did not enter into the mikdash. B'sheni, afterwards he then traverses the second path, b'nichnas, and then he goes into the mikdash, chayav. Then he is chayav, mimonav shach. This person is Tamei, no matter what. He went on both paths. We know one is Tor, one is Tamei. He has no recollection of which one is which or which one he went on. But in the meantime, he knows he went on both paths. So now he knows for sure he is Tamei. And now when he enters into the Mikdash, he is Chayav, because he has Helem Tumah. He forgot about being Tamei, entered into the Mikdash. That's going to be Mechayevim, a Korban Ole Briori. Halach v'rishon v'nichnas. We traversed the first path and then entered into the Mikdash. Hiza v'shana v'taval. He got hazat shlishi v'shvi'i, which is the sprinkling you need from the parah tumah to come tahor from tumat ameit. So he did it on the third day and the seventh day. I mean, he did it once, did it again. V'taval, and went to the mikveh. So now he's tahor from his tumah. V'acharkach halach b'sheni. Now he's completely tahor. And then he goes on the second path. V'nichnas. And enters into the mikdash. Chayav. The Tanakhama believes you're chayav in both of these cases. In both these cases, he for sure violated Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav. The only question is, what happened in between? In the first case, nothing happened in between, which means that he entered the Mikdash after traversing both paths. He is clearly still Tamei. And now, the entering into the Mikdash is a Vadai violation. In the second case, in both instances, he entered into the Mikdash. So that means one of the two enterings into the Mikdash was a violation. Question, was it after he went on the first path or after he went on the second path? One of those two paths has the Tumah on it, and then he enters into the Mikdash after each path. He was mitayarim himself in between. He doesn't know when he went into which one, and then he entered the Mikdash. But it's for sure in the end he did both of them, and he entered the Mikdash twice. Over there he's chayav. Now you could see differentiating, and that's what we're going to see Tanaim that argue on this, but the Tanakhama says in both those instances, mimonav shach, yachayav a korban oleh v'yoreid. And therefore bring your korban oleh v'yoreid. Rabbi Shimon poter. In that second case, Rabbi Shimon says you are potur. So you can see, obviously the difference between them is that in the first case, when he entered, there was no, we'll call it, stop in between. It's, he went on both paths, then entered the Mikdash once. When he entered the Mikdash, he for sure is chayav for that entry. That entry itself is the problem. In the second case, he has two entries into the Mikdash. One entry was fine, one entry was problematic, and he doesn't know which entry is the problematic one. Over there, Rabbi Shimon says, you are patur. You don't have sufficient knowledge then to be chayav because you're missing a piece of maturation, which is that you don't have. He says, "Ein kam b'achat mikulan yediyah v'deit b'tchila." You don't have a definitive yediyah beforehand in order to know that the forgetting is what caused him to enter in each of these cases. So even though he knows that by the time he got to the second path, that he for sure was tamei in one of the two instances, but in each instance that he entered, he doesn't have a yediyah for certain that he was tamei before he entered. It's a safek in both instances before he entered into the Mikdash. He entered twice. We know for sure he violated it once, but we don't know which of the two was the violation, and for we don't know which of the two had a yediyah vada'it beforehand. You have a safek yediyah, you don't have a vada'i yediyah. Suppose the first case here, where you have a yediyah vada'it, because you know for certain after you traverse both paths, then you know for sure you're a Tamei before you entered into the Mikdash. You may not know how you became Tamei, but you know for sure you are a Tamei at this point. And then when you enter the Mikdash, you're forgetting that you were a Tamei. So that would be the difference, which I mentioned to you before. The Tanakhama does not distinguish, but here Rabbi Shimon does. He says when you have Yediyah Vadeit that you're Tamei, then you can have Kurban Oleh V'Yoreid from Halama. But in the second case, where you only have a Yediyah Safek in each two of the entries. Now, if you sum them together, then you for sure enter Bitumah. But each one individually is a safek yediyah before you enter, and therefore Rabbi Shimon says you are patur. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda poter b'kulam mishum Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, says you're patur across the board. In all these cases, you are patur. To which the Gemara asks, we understand the Tanakhama's position. Well, I'll see in a second, we have to clarify a little more. We understand Rabbi Shimon's position to differentiate between the first case and the second case in the Braita. But to say Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda's position, which is you're patur across the board, that's hard to understand. Why in the first case would you be patur? And that's what the Gemara says. Bikulan? Bafilu bikamaito? He said, what do you mean? You're patur in all cases? Even the first case there? Mimono shach tamehu. In that case, he's for certain tamei. That's what we differentiated. That's why Rabbi Shimon differentiates between the first case and the second case. The first case, you went on both paths before you entered into the Mikdash. You are definitely tamei. Before you entered into the Mikdash, why should you be patur? Amarava chamayeskinan, v'on shalach b'rishon. He traversed the first path. U'b'sha shalach b'sheni, shachach shalach b'rishon. When he went on the second path, he forgot that he had walked on the first path. Davile miksat yediyah. That is a partial yediyah. U'v'ha kamiflegay. And this is the machloket between them. Now the machloket is not between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. It's a machlok between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda as to what Rabbi Shimon's opinion is. Their machlok it is, Tanakhama savar, that Rabbi Shimon believes, amrinan mitzat yediyah, kichol yediyah, partial knowledge is as if you have full knowledge. Rabbi Shimon savar, lo amrinan mitzat yediyah, kichol yediyah. As opposed to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, who thinks that Rabbi Shimon does not believe that mitzat yediyah is kichol yediyah. So now, explaining this is that if you aggregate the yediyah, what do you have over here? So the difference between the first case and the second case is that in the first case, you have two pieces of partial knowledge. You had knowledge that you went on the first path. You had knowledge that you went on the second path. But they're independent pieces of knowledge because you don't connect between the two. You don't remember that you went on both paths. So after you already went into the Mikdash. So he's nichnas the Mikdash and he remembers afterwards that he had gone on both paths. So now, did you have a yediyah beforehand, or did you not have a yediyah beforehand? According to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, no. In each piece, you're missing something. You have partial yediyah because when you went on the second path, you didn't remember the first path. So each piece of knowledge was completely independent, and you don't have a full piece of knowledge. We said you went on both paths before you entered into the Mikdash. That's a lack of Yediyah, and therefore you're not going to be Chayav and Korban Olev Yoreid. The other hand, the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon's opinion says that's not the case. Over here, if I aggregate the two separate Yediyot, together those Yediyot give you a Vada Yediyah. Knowing that you went on the first path, knowing you went on the second path, if I aggregate those pieces of information, you have a piece of information that says, I Vada Tameh. As opposed to the second case. In the second case where you went on the first path, entered, became Tahor, went on the second path, entered, and then became Tahor. In those cases, you are still, even if I aggregate the two pieces of information, you are still B'Safek. Even if I told you you went on the first path and you went on the second path, that doesn't help you. Because you don't know when you entered whether you went on the first or the second path, or you don't know which one was Tameh. The Safek remains even if I give you all the information. Because you separated the two, Nichnasim, entering into the Mikdash, you created a wedge between them by separating each one with a Tahara in between. And each one independently is a Safek. And if I aggregate the knowledge, I'm still in that same Safek. And so that will be the difference. According to Rabbi Shimon, the way that we have it in the Braita, Rabbi Shimon says, the first case, you're Chayav, because you have Tuma Vadayit. If you have all the knowledge there, you will know that you are Tameh, and you went into the Mikdash. In the second case, no matter how much knowledge I give you, it'll always be a Safek, and that's why you're not Chayav. According to Rabbi Shimon bar Yehuda, even in the first case, yes, if you aggregate the knowledge, you'd be Chayav because you have a Vadayit, but you have a mixed idea. Right now, you don't have all that information. You're only saying, I went on the second path. I don't remember going on the first path. Only later on do you realize that that is not a Yediyah Mitchila. So that explains their opinions. The only thing we're missing now is we did such a good job explaining Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Then why does the Tana Kama believe in the second case that you are Chayav? You're right, Mimonoshach, you're Chayav, but each one of them is a Safek. How does he overcome that problem? So that's what the Gemara says over here. Halach Berishon, V'nichnas, Hiza, V'shana, V'taval, V'chazar, V'alach V'shanim, Nichnas, Chayav. Rabbi Shimon Poter, V'amai Chayav, Safek Yediyahu. Now we already did such a good job explaining Rabbi Shimon, I don't understand why the Tana Kama is Mechayav in that case. It is a Safek Yediyah. Rabbi Yochanan, Kanasu Safek Yediyah, Ki Yediyah. So Rabbi Yochanan says that in this particular case, and we'll see why in a second, they made a Yediyah B'Safek like a Yediyah Vadayit. Basically what he's saying is we don't demand Yediyah Vadayit. By the case of Korban Olev Yoreid, there's not a demand for Yediyah. All you need is a Safek Yediyah. That's sufficient to make you Chayav. And we'll see why in a second. Rish Lakish Amar Hamani, the author of this position is Rabbi Shmoli, Damar Lo Be'inan Yediyah B'Tchila. This is Rabbi Shmuel, who we've seen over and over and over again through this perek and the previous perek, who says that you don't require Yediyah B'Tchila by the Korban Olev Yoreid. We'll see at the end of the perek why that is, that he thinks that. We finally get the source for Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. But Reish Lakish says that that is Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, that you don't require Yediyah B'Tchila, and that's why you're Chayav. This Tana Kama is following that position of Rabbi Shmuel, that you don't need Yediyah B'Tchila. That's why even if it's a Safek, you're going to be Chayav. Now, Virami, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Yochanan, Virami, the Reish Lakish, and the Reish Lakish. These positions that we just noted of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish seem to be in contradiction to a position they have in a Braita and Kretot. The Tanya, Achal Safek Chelev, Venoda. Safek Chelev, Venoda. Each time he wasn't certain about eating Chelev, then he finds out that he had that Safek, and then he goes again and has another Safek of eating Chelev. Rabbi Omer, Kashem Shemivi Chatat, Al Kol Echad Bechad, just like you would bring a Chatat for each one of these, Kach Mevi Hashem Taloi, Al Kol Echad Bechad. So too, for each one of them, you bring a Hashem Taloi. Rabbi Shimon Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Amru, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Eno Mevi El Hashem Taloi Echad. You only bring one Hashem Taloi, Shenemar, Al Shigigato, Asher Shagag. So you see the word Shigigato, the Gemara sees as being plural, Asher Shagag. Hatorah ribta shkigagot harbei v'asham taloi echad. That pasuk that's found in the parshiyah of Hashem Taloi says even from multiple shkigagot you can bring one Hashem Taloi. And Hashem Taloi provides you the protection for multiple violations until you find out whether you did or did not violate it. You don't have to bring a separate Hashem Taloi for each violation. So you have one fundamental machloket, which is an Hashem Taloi needed for every violation? Or can a single Hashem Taloi give you the protection that you need until you find out whether you're really Chayav a Chatat? Now let's remember, an Hashem Taloi comes for someone who violates something that if they knew they had violated a Bishogeg, they'd be Chayav a Chatat Kavua. So that means it's got to be something that is Chayav Karet B'Mezid, Chayav a Chatat Bishogeg, and then he has a question as to whether he did or did not do this Bishogeg. The Gemara in Kretel says, a machloket tanaim as to what the safek has to be. Can it be a safek shuman, safek chelev? Guy didn't know if he ate shuman or chelev. Or does it have to be that you have chelev and shuman in front of you, and he went to eat, and he's not sure which one he ate? There's a machloket there whether you need two objects, or it could be even in a single object. Either way, you will be chayav asham taloi, because you don't know for certain whether you ate chelev. If you knew it's for certain you ate the chelev b'shogeg, you'd chayav achatat. Since you don't know, you take an asham taloi, which provides you the protection until you find out. It's haganah. That's what we discussed earlier in the Masechta about Yom Kippur. Providing that type of haganah, and that's why, if you cross over Yom Kippur before bringing the asham taloi, you may not need the asham taloi, because Yom Kippur provides that same protection that the asham taloi does, which is, it gives you haganah until you find out the real information. Now, what Rabbi does is, and compares a chatat to an asham taloi. He says, just like when you have multiple violations by a chatat, you bring a separate chatat for each violation, so too, by an asham taloi, you're going to bring a separate asham taloi for each violation. The question is, what is he saying? What is the comparison to the case of chatat asham? That's a machlok of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and that's what provides us with this stira. And now we have Amar Reish Lakish, Kan Shana Rabbi Yidiot Sfeikot Mitchalkot Lechatot. He's saying that a Yidiyah Misafek is enough to differentiate between another chatat. And the way Rashi explains it, V'chachi kama Rabbi, Kishi Ivadalo Lachar Zman, Shechelev Haya, Yavi Chatat, Al Kol Echad V'chad, Shidiyat Safek, Shaitalo Bentayim, Michalkatam, Talo Nehavi Shnei Zeitei Chalav, Be'elam Echad. If you remember, we said above that if you eat two zeitim of chelev, but it was on all one forgetting, you forgot that this was chelev and you ate kazayit. 2 hours later, a day later, 2 days later, you never remember, and you then eat again thinking that it was mutar. In that case, you're going to bring one korban chatat, even though you ate two shiurim of violation, because the forgetting, there's only one forgetting over here. On the other hand, if you remembered in between, which is, you ate the chelev by accident, you didn't think it was chelev, then afterwards, you go, oh my gosh, it was chelev. 2 days later, you make the same mistake and forget and eat chelev, and there you're going to bring a chatat for each one of them. So even though you did the same number of violations, in a sense, in both these cases, the yedi'ah bentayim creates or separates between them and makes it that you have to bring a chatat for each violation. And so what Reish Lakish is saying is that a safek yedi'ah is sufficient grounds to be a separation between them. And he says here, what Rabbi is saying is that a safek yediyah, having some inkling of knowledge in between, is enough to now separate out these chelev eatings. Which is that if you ate a piece of chelev by accident, then in between you remember, but you don't remember that you really did eat chelev, you remember maybe I ate chelev. And then you go and eat another zayit of chelev, can you be mitzaref? Then Rabbi says, no, you have to bring a separate chatat. What does that show you? It shows you that safek knowledge is enough to separate between the two issues. You see, safek knowledge is deemed to be real knowledge. And just like safek knowledge is enough by a chatat kavua, so too by a sham taloi. By definition, you only have safek knowledge because you remember in between, I might have done something wrong, and then you might have done something wrong again. So that's enough of yediyah to separate them, and therefore you need a separate sham taloi for each case. But Rabbi Shlokish Kli says is, safek yediyah is deemed to be full yediyah. Now, Reish Lakish above didn't give that answer. When he spoke about Tumat Mikdash V'Kodeshav, he doesn't say Savek Yediyah Kediyah, he says it's Rabbi Yishmael, who doesn't need Yediyah at all. Why over here does Reish Lakish say that Savek Yediyah is Kediyah, then why does he answer the same thing by Tumat Mikdash V'Kodeshav? Rabbi Yochanan on the other hand, Amar, Kashem Shidiyad Vadai Ba'alma Mitchalkot Dechatot, Kach Yediyot Savek Mitchalkot Deshamot. Rabbi Yochanan says it depends on the level of the Korban. If you have a Korban Chatat that comes on a Diyat Vadai, then a Yedad Vadai is needed to separate between one Korban Chatat and the other. If you eat the Kazayit, have a Yediyat Vadai, and another Zayit Chelev, then you're going to be Chayav a separate Chatat. But that's because a Chatat comes from something knowing something in certainty. So then to separate between them, you need to have knowledge and certainty. On the other hand, when it comes to a Asham Taloi, you're Chayav because of a Safek knowledge. And therefore, all you need between them to separate them is Safek knowledge. So again here, you have a stira in Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, in our case, Tumat Mikdash V'Yad HaShav says, Safek Yediyah, Kediyah Vadayit. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan says, that's not the case. By Chatat, you need a Yediyah Vadayit in order to separate them. The only reason I allow you a Safek Yediyah by Hashem Taloi is because the whole Korban comes on a Safek Yediyah. So Safek Yediyah can separate between them. But that means that now we have a stira between Rabbi Yochanan Shita here and Rabbi Yochanan Shita above, and you have a stira between Reish Lakish Shita here and above. Bishlamo de Rabbi Yochanan de Rabbi Yochanan lo kasha. It's not a stira in Rabbi Yochanan kanasu. Lo b'chol atarakula asu. So no problem. By Tumat Nikdash v'kodoshav, there's a special din, asusafei Tumah, Kitumah Vadait. There's a special din by Tumat Mikdash Vikodashav that says Safek equals Vadai. That doesn't apply anywhere else. Why? Hokahu the Loktiva Yidiyah Behejya. By Tumat Mikdash Vikodashav, it never uses the word Hoda or knowledge. It doesn't say that he knows about it. It says Vene'elam Mimenu. That he forgot about it. It says Vene'elam Mimenu Viyada. Yada is afterwards he knows about it. But the yidiyah beforehand, there's never a word yidiyah that gives you that information. How do we know you need yidiyah b'tchilah? It says v'ne'elam, you forgot. The only way you can forget something is if you knew it up front. That means that the word yidiyah, or the requirement for yidiyah beforehand, is only an inference from the word v'ne'elam. As opposed to other cases in the Chol HaTorah Kula, asu dichtim o dayalav, yidiyah me'alta be'inon. There, it says you need knowledge. That knowledge is governed by the word hodah. It tells you you need a yidiyah. So if you need a yidiyah, yidiyah is vada'it. So what Rabbi Yochanan says is a difference. By chatat, the reason you're chayav in a chatat is because you know you did something wrong. When the Torah demands that you know, it means you know for certain, because it uses the word hodah. Ne'alam just says that you forgot. That means that I knew something, I forgot about it. How much do you need to know in order to forget? And that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Ne'alam means you forgot. It doesn't tell you that you need a yidiyah vada'it. It just means you need some form of knowledge beforehand to forget. Once you have that knowledge and forget it, that's enough. Even if it was only as a fake yidiyah up front. So that's how he differentiates between Tumat Mikdash v'Kodoshav and Shar Kol HaTorah Kula. The truth is, by Korban Olah V'Yored, you also have yidiyah, which is Ne'alam Mimenu V'Hu Yada. The yidiyah afterwards is the same yidiyah that you require b'chol HaTorah Kula. There you're going to need a full yidiyah afterwards. It's only the yidiyah before the forgetting that is unique to Tumat Mikdash v'Kodoshav that only comes from an inference. It has a different requirement of yidiyah. Ela Reish Lakish, Adamukim Leik Rabbi Shmuel, Nukma Kirabi. Why did he make our brayta that we brought with regards to the Tanakama? He says, oh, he holds like Rabbi Shmuel, that you don't need a yidiyah b'tchilah. According to Reish Lakish, Nukma Karabi, you could just set up like Rabbi says over here. According to him, he thinks that Safek Yidiyah is deemed to be a Yidiyah. That's what Reish Lakish just told us. The Rabbi thinks that a Safek Yidiyah between the different violations of Chaleb is enough of a Yidiyah to deem it as separate entities. So if it's a Safek Yidiyah there, why can't it be Safek Yidiyah be sufficient over here? That's what over here is uncertain as to why the Gemara thinks that Reish Lakish should set up the Braita like Rabbi instead of Rabbi Shmuel because of this Deya with regards to Safek Yidiyah Iskidiyah Vadayit. It should be just because of the fact that Rabbi doesn't require Yidiyah B'tchilah. He says Yidat Beit Rabbo is a sufficient Yidiyah to be Chayav over here. So why is it that we're demanding of Reish Lakish to set up like Rabbi? For that reason, you could have set up like Rabbi, period, because he only requires Yidiyah Rabbo, which is almost equivalent to the position of Rabbi Shmuel, that doesn't require Yidiyah at all. So the Baalei Tosfot want to answer that to set it up like Rabbi, that a Yidiyah B'tchilah is only Yidiyah Beit Rabbo, that's not a big chiddush. First of all, we know that's Rabbi's opinion. Number two is Rabbi said that explicitly, so we don't need you to bring that or set up a braita in that manner to give us that position of Rabbi. As opposed to Rabbi Yishmael, where we don't know about the fact that he doesn't require yidiyah b'tchilah, that's an inference from his position with regards to other matters. And so therefore, setting it up like Rabbi Yishmael is a chidush. But if you say that Saveg yidiyah kidiyah vadeit in Rabbi's position, then setting up the braita like that would actually indicate a chidush in Rabbi's position. And it would be worthwhile to set it up like Rabbi in that case. That's the question on Reish Lakish. Why didn't he set up with Rabbi, which would have indicated to us some form of chiddush that we wouldn't have otherwise known? Tosafot does point out that in Reish Lakish's opinion, this also happens to be somewhat of a steer between the two positions of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Because in the case of the Chatat and the Asham Taloi, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda argues only on the Asham Taloi position of Rabbi, not on the Chatat position. Whereas over here, he argues even on the Mikdash v'Kodoshav position, if you said it like Rabbi. And therefore you'd end up with the stira in Rabbi Shimon Yehuda's position. And Tosafot then B'dochak says maybe that's exactly what the Gemara is asking when it's saying Reish Lakish should have set up the braita like Rabbi in order to make it a machloket Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Yehuda in both places. But it's still, as Tosfos points out, is a dochak. And really, according to Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda's position is not easy then to understand based on what he thinks Rabbi's position is, because in the case of Chatat Kavua, he says Yediat Safek is sufficient, whereas by the case of Tumat Mikdash V'Kodeshav, he says Yediat Safek is not sufficient, and we would have thought, as we're going to see in the conclusion of the Gemara, just the opposite. The answer is, HaKamashman de Rabbi Shmuel lo ba Yediat B'Tchila. Now, he wanted to teach you this din, that Rabbi Shmuel doesn't require Yediat B'Tchila. Enochanami, he could have set it up like Rabbi. So why did he set it up like Rabbi Shmuel? To teach you that Rabbi Shmuel has this opinion that you don't need a Yediat B'Tchila. Pshita, it's a little boy. Of course he doesn't need it. Why? To lo maitre le cry. He doesn't have an extra pasuk to teach you that. B'ne'alam de Michayev ele Mikdash. We have a drasha, which comes from the two words b'ne'alam. The word ne'alam is repeated twice. Rabbi Shmuel learns from that b'ne'alam means he'alam tuma. B'ne'alam means he'alam mikdash and the kodesh. So he uses both words of ne'alam to teach you one about halamat tuma and one to teach about halamat mikdash. That's the source of Rabbi Shmuel's position. Others who hold that there's only elam tuma, what do they do with the extra v'ne elam? That comes to teach you that you need a yediyah b'tchila. Ne'elam, you forgot, means that you had a yediyah beforehand. So they have an extra word v'ne elam to teach you yediyah b'tchila. Rabbi Shmuel uses both words of ne'elam to teach you ne'elam helam mikdash and elam tuma. He has no helam left over to teach you yediyah b'tchila. So of course he doesn't hold a yediyah b'tchila. Why do I need Reish Lakish to tell me that? That's an obvious outcome of Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. That maybe he doesn't have it from the Psukim. Maybe he has a Mesorah that is the case. That he doesn't even have a Mesorah about that. Rabbi Shmuel believes, Ein Yediyah B'Tchila. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that we saw throughout the first two Brakim. That he doesn't have any requirement for Yediyah B'Tchila. Reason being that is that he uses the word Ne'alam for two different types of Elamot, and therefore he doesn't have a Ne'alam left over to teach you Yediyah B'Tchila. And he has no Mesorah also. Even without the Psukim, he has no Mesorah. That's what Reish Lakish is teaching you. But in Ochanami, Reish Lakish could have made Rabbi the author of the Braita before, because Rabbi believes that a Safek Yediyah is equal to a Vada Yediyah. And the way that Rabbi Yochanan answered that Braita, he could have answered in that position of Rabbi. Rabbi Yochanan says Rabbi's position is different in Korban Oleh B'Yoreid versus in the case of Korban Chatat because of the source for the fact you need Yediyah. The Korban Oleh B'Yoreid, the source is Vnei Alam, which doesn't require a high level of Yediyah, even a Safek Yediyah will suffice. Supposed to Chatat requires a Behodah Elav, which means you need real Yediyah in order to separate between the different Chataot. And then they give different reasons as to why Rabbi requires a Hashem Taloy or multiple Hashemot Tluyim. For Reish Lakish, it's because Safek Yediyah is Kediyavadit. And for Rabbi Yochanan, it is because just like a Bada Yediyah separates between Chataot, a Safek Yediyah will separate between Hashemot Tluyim. Okay, with that we end the second parak. Andran Alach Yediyot Tuma. And with that, we also leave the world of Tuma, and we finally get to the topic of the Masechta, which is Shavuot. From the beginning, Mishnah, the Gemara asked about this, and said we needed to deal with the small number of Alachot of Tuma, two prakim worth. And now we finally get to the Perek of Shavuot, Shtaim Shein Arba, even though it's only one Perek, but the rest of the Masechta is going to deal with different types of Shavuot, and that's the large topic of the Masechta, which is Shavuot. So Shavuot, Shtaim Shein Arba. What is a Shavuot Shtaim Shein Arba? Shavua Shokhal. Vishalo Ochal. Person takes a Shavua that he will eat. Or that he will not eat. She'achalti Vishalo Achalti. I did eat or I didn't eat. So, each of those is the four. In that you have two that deal with the future and two that deal with the past. So we'll see in the Gemara as to why one is more obvious than the other. But the pasuk says, Lahara Ulehetiv, which is a future statement. And hara and hatava means something positive and something negative. Positive and negative in the sense that you will do or you won't do something. You will desist from something or you will engage in something. So the shvua that are shtayim is shvua shochal, I will eat, or shlo achal, or I will not eat. Sheachalti v'shlo achalti now is the arba. There's an additional two, which again we discussed earlier in the Masechta as to why that is. But achalti and shlo achalti is shtayim nosafot that comes out of the drosha that we'll see later on in the perek, how we know that things in the past are chayav. Earlier in the Masechta, we dealt with the problem of lav she'im bo maseh. That many of these, at least three of these cases, are lav she'im bo maseh. And why are you chayav makot for three out of the four cases, given that they are lav she'im bo maseh? Shvua shlo ochal. Person says it takes a shvua that he will not eat. V'achal koshu. he eats any amount, chayav, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says you don't need the standard shiur that is found in the Kol HaTorah Kula. A kol shiur is sufficient to be in violation of your shvua. Again, we'll have to discuss why that is. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, heicha matzinu bochel kol shiur shu chayav. There's nowhere else in the Torah where if you eat a small amount, any minute amount, that you're chayav. You need to cross over a threshold, which is a shiur of a kezayit, a shiur of a kebetza, a shiur of a kotevet, depending on the situation. But there's always a shiur to make you chayav. Why all of a sudden over here there is no shiur? Rabbi Akiva, where do we find someone who speaks and then is chayav in a korban? Shezeh medaber umevi korban. That this person speaks and brings a korban. Generally, you need an action. You need a ma'aseh to be chayav. Here, dibur makes you chayav. And if dibur is sufficient to make you chayav, the rules of the game here are completely different than they are in Kol HaTorah Kula. You're telling me, why am I making this exceptional? The whole case is exceptional, because here, dibur makes you chayav. So in essence, what Rabbi Akiva is saying is that the violation here is the violation through the dibur, and not a violation when you eat. And obviously that has a big nafkamina. It's not the eating or the violation of the shvua that is the violation. The violation is created from the moment you make the shvua. And that actually is what will differentiate it from other cases. Even though we do have cases where you chayav on dibur, for instance, migadeif, later on in the Masech, the shvuat ha'idut, where you are going to bring a korban for dibur, there the dibur itself is the isur. You're doing something wrong at the moment that you say something, that's what makes you chayav. Here, when you say something, it's a neutral statement. Yet in the end, you're chayav for that statement based on what you do later on. And so what Rabbi Akiva says is, I don't find another case, bin midaber, where you speak, and the speaking is a violation, yet the inherent speech is nothing wrong with it. And that's what's unique about a shvua, that Rabbi Akiva believes in the end, you're chayav because of the shvua, and the dibur is what makes you chayav, even though the dibur inherently is not a sur. And that differentiates it from megadeh and shvuat ha'idut, but also means that it's different than any other violation in the Torah, where the achila itself is the violation, and not the shvua, not the dibur that you took. Lememra d'sho'ochal d'achilna mashma. That when you say shvua sho'ochal, shvua that I will eat, makes it sound like you must eat, that I'm intending to eat, in the positive formulation. Virmini, is that really true? Shvua lo ochal lecha, shvua sho'ochal lecha, lo shvua shelo ochal lecha, asur. In any of the cases, if he formulates the shvua in the following manner, this is from Nidarim. Over there it says, if I say shvua that I will not eat with you, shvua sho'ochal lecha, and then we review shvua sho'ochal lecha, as Rashi says over here, klomar, b'isur shvua e'elai, ma sho'ochal mishalcha, that with an isur shvua should be anything that I eat from you, and lo shvua lo ochal lecha, which means that it's a double negative, which means I won't be in a shvua for that which I don't eat from you, implying that what I do eat from you is b'isur anah. Tosafot does point out that it's somewhat problematic because the Gemara Nidarim says the author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir does not have a view that michlal lav atashumei heinu, michlal hein atashumei olav. He doesn't allow you to make inferences from statements, but you have to articulate exactly what you mean, both in the negative and positive formulations. We won't infer. Yet over here, we're inferring from that statement. The Bali Tosafot answer that there's a difference between Nidarim and Shvuot. It's true by Nidarim, we won't make such an inference, but by Shvua, we will make such an inference. As he says, I'll explain to you later on in the Masechta. Although the Ramban does not accept that distinction, and therefore he has a different girsa over here, instead of saying, lo shvua lo ochal lecha, he says, lishvua lo ochal lecha. He changes the girsa to be lishvua, that it will be a shvua, that lo ochal lecha, that I will not eat from you, and then it's very similar to the previous language that we had before, and then you don't have to get into this question with regards to Rabbi Meir. Asur, in all those cases, you may not eat with that individual. You made yourself asur banah to that individual. One of those formulations was shvua sho'ochal lecha. It's a shvua that I will eat with you. And yet what the intent of the shvua is clearly is that I will not eat with you. And that's the result. You may not eat anymore. We're saying here shvua sho'ochal lecha means I must eat. And then you're saying over there shvua sho'ochal lecha means I will not eat. Amar Abaye lo'olam tachil namashma. The default meaning of shvua sho'ochal lecha means to eat. Lo kasha, and it's still not a problem. Kam misarvim bo lechol, kam b'shem misarvim bo lechol. Depends on the context. Context makes a difference as to the meaning of the shvua. But nitin, Our Mishnah is a case, b'shem misarvim bo lechol. Nobody's prompting him. Nobody's prodding him to do anything. He simply takes a shvua out of nowhere and says, shvua shochal, that means that is shvua that I will eat. That's his statement. He's saying, I will eat, and that's what he means. Brayta, the brayta that we just quoted, b'misarvim bo lechol. It's a case where they're pressing him to eat. We want you to come over. We want you to join us for the meal. We want you at the party. B'kamar lo achilna. V'lo achilna. He says, no, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to eat. Dechika mishtabo hachigamar. When he takes the shvua in that context, that's what he means. Shvua shalo ochal. It means that I'm taking a shvua that I'm not going to eat. Even when he says shvua shalo ochal, it means shvua that I'm going to eat by you, means shvua that I'm never going to eat with you. But he says in the reverse, which is he says, shvua if I will eat with you. Which intent is clear that I will not eat with you. Vashi amar, tnei shvua shi ochal decha. So he says, just change imen to say shvua shi ochal decha, that I will not eat with you. Change the braita to, instead of saying shvua shi ochal decha, he wrote shvua shi e, meaning he has a negative statement, shi ochal decha. I ochil mala memra. Then what's the chiddush over there? At least if you say that it's a positive statement, and we say that it meant that he didn't want to eat, then you have a chiddush in that. But if now you say that he said it in a negative formulation, then what's the chiddush? Of course, if you say I'm not going to eat, then you take a shvua, that means you're not going to eat. Maudutema, lishne ditkilale. He got caught up in his tongue twisted, and he said, I ochal lecha, but he really meant, ochal lecha, kamash malan. No, she ochal lecha means that I will not eat, and not just simply a catch of the tongue that made him say it that way. So that's the chiddush over there. But that'll explain the difference between our Mishnah, or the formulation in our Mishnah, versus the formulation in the Braita. Alright, we're gonna stop here by the two dots in the top of Chof Amud Aleph.